Hello, everyone. It's Bill Thompson, T-Bill, and welcome to Plain Market Talk, where I will provide a straightforward interpretation and analysis of current market news based on my background as a retired Wall Street stockbroker with almost 50 years of experience. And I will also provide business lessons to help you become much more successful with your personal finance, trading, and investments. So let's get started. Hey everyone, it's Bill Thompson, T-Bill. Welcome to Plain Market Talk. Today is Friday, May 12, 2023. Okay, it's 10:19 in the morning. Markets are flat at the moment. We have the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 0.08%. S&P 500 unchanged, actually. And we have the NASDAQ Composite down 0.18%. Markets actually have been having a fairly good year. Here's the numbers as of Wednesday's close. Year-to-date, the Dow is up 1.16%, although the S&P 500 is up 7.77% year-to-date, and we have the NASDAQ Composite up 7.58%. Stock markets, you know, I've talked about this on previous sessions, they go up about 75% of the time, down 25% of the time. Long-term returns at the market are just a little bit under 11% a year, so anyway, so overall, so far, things are looking pretty good. The thing about the Dow being not up as much as the others, it's only 30 stocks, so sometimes that does have an influence. Okay, so what we have going on today, I've got to talk about a few things here. Disney took a big hit yesterday on some subscriber issues at Disney+. So we'll talk about what's going on over there with that. Twitter might have a new chief executive officer. Still seeing some issues with the regional bank stocks. Labor shortage, it seems to be starting to unwind itself. I'm going to continue on now with bonds, and I'm going to talk about some terminology in the bond market. So we do have a few things. And then we have the possible debt default from the U.S. federal government. So basically what happens is basically, our government, as mandated by Congress, the borrowing limits have to be raised periodically, and the government's now close to hitting that limit. So Congress can raise the limit. That's not the problem. But, you know, there's a lot of political issues right now. One side wants to, you know, lower spending. The other side's like, just raise the limit. They always work it out. It gets a lot of press. And sometimes we even hit the limit and things shut down for a few days and then they work it out. So one thing I did want to mention, you know, I've covered quite a while back, you got to be careful with numbers in the world of finance. A number by itself doesn't always mean a lot. A lot of times we have to compare it to something else. If I said an individual has $100,000 in credit card debt, is that a lot? Well, it depends. If the person makes $40,000 a year and has $100,000 in credit card debt, well, yeah, that's a lot. But, you know, if the person's an NBA basketball player making $20 million a year, it's not really a lot. So it's the same thing with the U.S. government debt. Our debt is about $16 trillion right now, which is the highest level in history. However, there's some things you got to look at with that. So as far as that goes, the $16 trillion, okay, so what is that? Well, actually, the number you'll see posted is $31 trillion. So, okay, so why are you saying 16? The reason is that one half of our government debt is one government agency owes it to another. So the true number is around $16 trillion. However, you have to look at it as compared to the size of the economic output of the United States. The United States is expected this year, I think the gross domestic product will be just a little bit under $25 trillion, largest economy in the world. Well, when you take that number, 16 trillion divided by 25 trillion, it's like 64%. That's actually in range of what our debt level's been throughout the history of the United States. It's usually between 40 to about 75%. It's been as high, actually, 1865, it was like 140% of our economic output. Also in 1945, about 140%. Those were the years that we were coming out of the American Civil War and World War II. So the debt level is high, but compared to the size of the economy, it's actually not that really that much higher than it has been throughout our history. So I wanted to mention that. All right. So Disney, Disney reported their earnings, I believe came in Wednesday night, might have been early Thursday. But anyway, sales numbers, profit numbers came in with expectations. However, the market expected that Disney Plus, the streaming service, would have added 1 million new subscribers. They ended up losing 4 million subscribers. So Disney stock, symbol DIS, was down 9% yesterday. It's flat right now, basically unchanged. Market didn't like that. And Bob Iger, head of Disney, announced they may be cutting back on some content. See, Disney Plus loses money. It has been since it started in 2019. A lot of these streaming services actually lose money, so why do the companies continue on with them? They're trying to build a subscriber base and then turn it profitable as time goes on. You know, when these streaming services all started becoming super popular a few years ago, you know, it was well known that consumers are only going to spend so much a month on streaming services, so everybody wants a cut of the pie. But what may be happening with Disney Plus, you know, with higher inflation, people are having to spend money other places, you know, spend it on food, you know, gas, whatever, maybe something they're cutting back on. So that could be part of it also, or just moving on to other streaming services. But what about the cutting of the content? How you know, a content that these are TV shows and so forth, movies that are already completed, how does that save money? Well, I talked about that last time with HBO Max. Basically, a lot of times you have to pay residuals to the actors, use actors for male and female, the producers, directors, and if you drop the content completely from the service, you don't have to pay residuals. So that's how they save money there. There's also, you could possibly sell some of the content to somebody else. We got that. Speaking of inflation, we had the inflation reports come out this week, and they show inflation is coming down. The consumer price index, which was hitting an annualized level of about 9% a year or so ago, came in at about 4.8% annualized rate. So that's looking pretty good. And the producer price index, which looks at it from the seller's standpoint, that actually is a lower number. That came out yesterday, a little under annualized rate of 3%. So inflation does seem to be coming down. The market does like that. Feeling is the Federal Reserve may now pause its efforts as far as raising interest rates and decreasing the money supply to slow the economy down, see what happens. All right, so we got all that news also. Got some news here over at NBC Universal. Their advertising chief, Linda Yaccarino, she has resigned, but the reason believed by the market is that she has accepted the position as the new CEO of Twitter. So we'll see if that's true or not, but that's what we have going on there. Okay, we still have some continuing issues with the regional bank stocks. Last time I mentioned we have the national banks like JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo. We have regional banks, and then we have local banks. Okay, PacWest, they actually, that stock dropped 20% yesterday. That's a low price stock. Their trading symbol is PACW, Paul Apple Charlie William for PacWest. Anyway, right now they're at $4.72, actually up 3 cents. But yeah, they went down 20% yesterday. They said that they were, actually wasn't that much. Yeah, 20%. They said their deposits, they've lost 9.5% of their deposits in the last week. Well, what's been happening with some of these regional stocks? Depositors have been getting nervous about these banks. They're taking their phones out, moving their accounts and their money to much bigger banks like JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and so forth. So we've got some of that happening. So we'll see what continues to go on there. We've had several failures with regional banking stocks, but it has not been widespread. Okay, we've also got a couple other things here. I saw a report that economists are saying the labor market does seem to be finally easing. You know, as I'm sure you're aware, there's been a labor shortage. A lot of companies are having trouble finding workers, and that's been part of our inflation. What's been happening? Companies have to raise wages to attract workers. For many companies, wages are their largest expense, and they simply raise their prices to cover that. So we're beginning to see the labor market beginning to loosen up some. We do still have somewhat of a tight labor market, but things seem to be loosening up there. So we got that news also. Okay, so what I wanted to talk about today are the bond market versus, just terminology. First of all, the bond market versus the stock market. Which one is bigger? Well, the stock market is huge. The worldwide stock market is about $107 trillion in size. The United States alone makes up around 45% of that. So about $107 trillion. However, the bond market is around $125 trillion. So the bond market's actually bigger than the stock market. So as far as a bond, last time what I mentioned is what a bond is. It's a loan to a government or corporation where you get two promises. Promise to get your money back plus a rate of interest. Now, the bond market's been around a long time. It's actually been around in one form or another for thousands of years. Governments have been borrowing off of their citizens almost as long as we've had governments. And so, you know, like the old Roman Empire, what they would do, they'd borrow off their citizens, go off and use the money to pay for the military, go off and conquer somebody, take the assets for whoever they conquer to pay back their bondholders. So it's not a new concept. Now, as far as that, first of all, the name bond, where does that come from? It actually goes back to about the 12th century. It's actually a derivation of the word band, B-A-N-D. It's an old Middle English word. The idea of the word band is that it would bind you together, the borrower and then the bond issuer. So they were bound together, band together by an agreement. That's where the word bond comes from. So anyway, it goes back about the 12th century. All right, so to finish up today, let me just talk about some basic terminology, and then I will cover this stuff in much more detail on upcoming sessions, okay? So first of all, bonds. First of all, we have the term face value. Now, that is usually the amount borrowed. It's the reason, back in the day, bonds were actually printed. They were certificates that you would actually be in physical possession of. Today, it's mostly all done electronically. I'll explain why another day, but anyway. So what would happen? That's the amount borrowed. Now, most bonds are issued in increments of $1,000. And so that's called the face value because it was printed right on the front of the bond, the face of the bond. Okay, so that's face value. That's the amount borrowed, $1,000. We also have par value. Now, for bonds, it's usually equal to the face value. With stocks, it's technically its value. With stocks, par value is usually just listed as a penny. The reason they're listed as a penny on stocks is if the company ends up owing lots of money, as an owner of the company, you're never asked to pay more than the par value, a penny a share. So that's what that is. But anyway, for bonds, it's usually the same as the face value. Now, we have what's called market value. This is the value a stock, a bond can be sold for on the open market. That could be more or less than $1,000, depending on what the current level of interest rates are compared to what the bond is locked in. So talk about that another day. The interest rate is called the coupon rate. Now, why is it called a coupon? Well, back in the old days with bonds, they had these interest rate coupons attached to them. And on the designated date, what you would do as a bondholder, you take a pair of scissors, you clip off the coupon, bring it to a designated bank, and they'd give you a gold coin or so forth for your interest. And so that's why we call it the coupon rate. Now, that's the coupon rate. Now, we do measure bonds very definitively as far as interest rates. We have what's called a basis point. A basis point is 1/100th of a percent. So 100 basis points equals 1% on a bond, 50 basis points, 0.5%. We also have maturity date. This is the date the money will be paid back. So that's maturity date. We also have what's called a call date. Sometimes the issuer of a bond can call it in early, particularly if interest rates have gone down, they can refinance at a lower rate. So that's called call date. We also have yield to maturity. Now what this is, talking about all this stuff again, more detail another day, that takes into account, if you bought a bond for more or less than $1,000, and then you hold it, say, all the way till it matures at $1,000. It takes into account the price difference plus the interest payments you have received, your total return to maturity, yield to maturity. Yield's another word for return with bonds, also sometimes just used for interest. Now, in the world of treasury loans to the U.S. government, if it comes due in less than 1 year, it's called a treasury bill. That's actually where my nickname comes from in the brokerage industry, Bill Thompson. They used to call me T-bill. It's also treasury bills are called T-bills. So if the bond comes due in less than a year, it's called a treasury bill. If it comes due in 1 to 10 years, it's called a treasury note. If it comes due in more than 10 years, treasury bond. We also have what's called the money market versus the capital market. These are bond investments. Money market, they come due in less than a year. It's called the money market, more than a year, capital market. We also have, to wrap things up, I know I'm covering a lot of stuff, but I will cover it in more detail. All right, categories of bonds. All right, corporate bonds are issued by companies. Municipal bonds are issued by city and state governments, municipalities. Government bonds are issued by, in this case, the U.S. Treasury, although it could be foreign governments also. We also have what are called U.S. agency bonds. Now, what these are government-affiliated organizations, like the various mortgage associations, Federal National Mortgage Association, Fannie Mae, it's called. We got Freddie Mac and all those. Again, we'll cover it in more detail. We also have what are called zero-coupon bonds. These bonds do not pay interest. What happens is you buy them at a lower price, say $500, and then some years later, you get $1,000 back. So that's what those are. We also have convertible bonds. These are bonds that can be converted into a company stock. So we have those. Again, we'll talk about it in more detail. Callable bonds are the ones that they could conceivably be called back early by a company, a government, whatever it would be. We also have what are called puttable bonds, P-U-T-T-A-B-L-E. This allows the bondholder to force the borrower to buy the bond back at full value. That could be an advantage if interest rates have gone down or you think the borrower is now running into trouble. So anyway, so we got all that kind of stuff. We also have options on bonds, just lots of stuff. But that's what I wanted to cover is basically the terminology. So I'll get into more detail on the next session. Hope everyone's doing well. Again, Bill Thompson, T-Bill. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. See ya. We'll be right back.